This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Welcome to Blood is Red, volume one of the Color Collection series of short story anthologies written by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler. Blood is Red is also available as an ebook and an unabridged audiobook. For links to purchase any version, visit scottsigler.com/bloodisred. Hello, everyone. Welcome to part two of the Blood is Red Q&A, where I and my partner, A Real Girl herself, answer your questions about not only Blood is Red, but the Siglerverse as well. And we will say right out front, unzip, unfurl, there are giant girthy spoilers in this podcast. If you've not listened to all of the Siglerverse stuff, you may get spoiled on this. So you have two options.
One, you can jump ahead every time we mention, or you can come back after you've caught up on everything in the Siglerverse.
Yeah, you go buy all my shit and listen to and or read all my shit, preferably both, and then come back and find this bookmarked episode, because I know you made a bookmark, because you do not want punishment. You do not want
punishment. You want to jump right into it?
Let's get into it. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like Scott said, I'm going to ask him questions. They are spoilerific. I am going to try to let you guys know along the way if I think of it. And they're all questions from you guys. Sam Morris wrote in and said, how old are the stories in Blood is Red? I like the mix of eras, like between Wolf and Redman, and also the sprinkling of religion, aliens, mutants, and some supernatural all in one book. Who's the mutant?
Let's talk about how old these stories. Some of these stories are over 20 years old. Some of these stories I was writing very early on in my career. Some of them I'd started or taken a pass at even before I got to the point where I was writing a short story every week, beginning to end, edited, finished, in order to ramp up into the writing career to prove to myself that I could do that. As far as the different eras of the fiction, it just depends on the story. It just depends on the idea. But I will tell you, in my most recent work, I have learned I'm probably not going to do any pre-modern fiction
again,
ever again, especially not in the context of a novel, because fuck, is it hard work, you guys? It is so hard work to have to cut out all of the common phrases we use in day-to-day life and to go, okay, when did people start using the phrase, tie one on? Okay, if this is 1750, check it out. Like, turns out that's a 19th, can't use it. And that's so much work, and I don't want to do it anymore. I just want to tell fart jokes and put them in print.
To be fair, this is one of the reasons, because of the difficulty that it was writing the crypt, because the crypt is a dark story if you haven't read it. Once a week, he was writing something else, and he wanted to write something very deep and dark and creative. And I was like, you're going to write about fart jokes. We got to go back to fart jokes. We absolutely have to, because it would be too heavy for him to do both at the same time, which is why we got Slay. And I'm not mad about it at all.
Yep, Slay worked out good. So, by the way, David Taylor, best comment of both episodes. He says, the continuity between this and the last episode is amazing. Very good. Very good, sir. Very good. What's up, Travis?
Okay. Beckett Barham says, how many hours a day do you write, and how do you keep everything in your intricate plot lines straight while you do?
Multi-part question. Let's get into it. How long do I write every day? The goal is 4 hours a day of actual writing, then 4 hours a day of business stuff, outlining, emails, all the other stuff. And then I go out and enjoy my perfect life with my fucking fantastic, ridiculous, amazing wife. That so far has not actually ever happened, except for maybe 3 days. Right now, I would say today was a day off, because I wrote for 10 hours and then I prepared for this podcast. I'd say the last 7 or 8 writing days have been at minimum 13 hours, at maximum 15 hours, because we're under not only a deadline to deliver for a business partner we have, I need to be done with this. I need to get this book done, get it out the door so I can go work on a bunch of other shit. So I would say back in the day when some of you started listening to me 15 years ago, 10 years ago, those were probably 70 hour week
yeah, probably.
Weeks. When you factor in, if you factor in all the business, they're probably 80 hour weeks. And now I think I'm down to like maybe 60, 65, depending on if there's a crushing deadline, it can jump up a notch.
Yeah.
But the goal will be, well, I'd love to make this a 40 hour week job. We'll see how that works.
We have been kludging in changes that I do think once we get past this deadline hurdle will be a little bit easier. Okay, Tracy Shank, who unfortunately just left, asked, is there any method or preference when choosing the weapons for your stories? Many different choices, as I've heard, within your books. Not counting GFL story choices, do you have favorites? Or is it just researching special ops weapons? Or is it just researching special ops weapons? Like in Earth Corps, the simple weapons, Sea Camp, like Brian Clauser has in Nocturnal, or even the Hippo's handgun. I find myself Googling those I don't recognize after listening.
That's a combo. It is, I would say it's a three-part story. Number one, I'll Google weapons for a particular situation. I'll find something like, oh, dude, that is so sick. And then I work it into a book. However, that's part one, and I will say I've pretty much exhausted all the Super 6 stuff I've ever looked up and gotten to the breakpoint where this would take 4 pages of explanation, and I really just want to mention it in 2 paragraphs. So that has gone by the wayside. Step two is relying on Chris Grawl, Mr. Happy, who is in the chat room right now. Those of you who listen to podcasts, can see. We do this show every Wednesday, 6 p.m. Pacific time, 9 p.m. Eastern time. You can watch it, twitch.tv/scottsigler, youtube.com/scottsigler, facebook.com/scottsigler. A Real Girl and I show up every week and we talk to you live. Join us in the chat room. So the second part two of the three-part trident of weapons, as we like to call it, the triumvirate of weaponry, is I will go to Chris Grawl, who's one of the secret agents, and tell him my stories and say, I need some super fucking cool shit in this situation right here. Mm-hmm. And he will send a link and be like, this weapon is the bomb. And I'll look at it and be like, you're right, that weapon is the bomb. And then we'll put that weapon in. And then the third part of the triumvirate of weaponry is, yes, three parts. The third part is Chris and I will just invent a weapon. We'll make a weapon.
Nice.
And Chris, for the crypt, Chris
did. Hey, Robin,
did,
nice to see you.
Chris did, I'm going to guess, somewhere between 30 and 40 PowerPoint slides showing not only how all the different weaponry works, but how, the strategy of using the weaponry, how people reload, how they get trained, all this detail, most of which you don't see, but I, with the visual graphics he provides and his knowledge, I'm able to make it seamless. And
in fact, I know for a fact
that
one of the weapons he's talking about that he created with Chris can be found in Chris's soon-to-be-out book, Trigger Guard, which is weapons knowledge for writers specifically. Yep. Chris is a writer of fiction as well. This is a nonfiction book based on his expertise and his love of sci-fi and his writing acumen as well as a fiction writer. And you can even see it in that book. Scott said, I need a cool-ass gun like this. And Chris used his knowledge to create that weapon, which you can see a graphic of in Trigger Guard when it comes out. And one of the most interesting things, Chris was here this weekend and he mentioned that there are some things that are part of that weapon that never got mentioned and never got used, but the process of thinking it through to create the said weapon so that it would be consistent and hold up and like it wouldn't recoil if it wasn't supposed to, even if you never mentioned the recoil. I thought that was pretty cool. So yep. You can take a look
very
at
cool.
that in Trigger.
Very cool.
Okay. Did you have another? Oh, we've just switched.
We're switching cameras now. So I can.
Hodari Davenport asked.
Hodari. Great.
What is your process on selecting the right narrator for your work when you decide that you're not going to do it yourself? Ray Porter is a great choice, but there are so many more out there, like R.C. Bray, Kate Reading, Simon Vance, to name a few. So how do you go about picking talent to ensure that your vision and feel of the story fits?
Oh, okay. This is an interesting question. I'm going to cover this as quickly as I can, but this is a chronological documentation of how shit works. When I started podcasting, I was not published. I had no leads. Nothing was going on. I was getting rejection letters left and right. I learned about podcasting. I learned how to podcast. And I went in and just turned on a microphone and started recording. So I was narrating my own books. And then when we got the deal for the big deal with Random House for Infected, Contagious, and Pandemic, I went ahead and I said, the reason I had this deal is because I do my podcast every week and people know my voice. I'm going to do Infected. They were like, okay, recorded Infected. Went great. My agent forgot to get me paid for Infected. So that was like the first wake up call. Be like, oh, that was a lot of time and I didn't get paid for this. crazy side story. Went out and did Contagious, and then by the time we got to Pandemic, we're starting to get busy. We started to go out to get other narrators. We move forward. The Generations trilogy is a primary female POV protagonist, so we went out and found a woman to do those stories. And somewhere during that time, we were introduced to Ray Porter by Jonathan Mayberry, and Ray Porter did Earth Corps for us. We were able to land him for that. And the answer to your question is, why don't we have other narrators? If you find a narrator who delivers mostly on time, mostly at a rate you can afford, sometimes you got to go a little bit in the red for it, but you know the quality you're going to get. And having hired A-list narrators a couple of times and having wound up meeting someone who's an absolute prima donna, who doesn't deliver on time, who screws up all of our publication schedules and is extraordinarily difficult to work with, when you find someone who is none of those things, you tend to grab onto him. And Ray is one of those people who is none of those things. So we primarily stick to Ray. If I narrate it, great. From now on, if it's female narrated, it's probably going to be A, we keep it all in-house. Mm-hmm. If it's a larger title and we can get away with a male narrator, it's probably going to be Ray, because Ray is a gem. So that's in a nutshell how it all progressed.
And that's also, he's speaking of books that Empty Set puts out. So we didn't choose Bronson Pinchot for the Aliens book, Recorded Books, or whoever put it out did. Are we delighted? Absolutely.
Oh my God, it was
absolutely epic.
What a great,
yes,
what a lovely human.
But I don't think we could have gotten on his radar. I don't know that we...
So I'm not sure I would have known he was out there.
So
I listen to a fuck ton of audiobooks. I've heard of these other narrators. And eventually we will probably wind up working with someone else. But you guys really haven't had a chance to see it yet. But when A gets to create an audio project from scratch, or she's not trying to follow up on someone or do another thing, it's pretty spectacular. So I'm pretty excited about that. All right, let's rock.
Sean Dyer, these are from before, but still great questions. Aside from Krakens versus Orbiting Death, what are the major GFL rivalries?
That's a good question. Sean's always got some deep cuts. I think it's usually conference related. I think Orbiting Death, being the Raiders of the GFL, even though there's another team called the Raiders, is they hate everyone. Everyone hates them. So the Raiders have diehard rivalries with the Chargers, the Chiefs, and everyone. Like, the Raiders seem to have a rivalry with friggin' everyone. As far as other specific rivalries, I really haven't gotten into it all that much. I think
it's something with Isis Ice Storm, right? That's a football or a quarterback thing, right?
The Isis Ice Storm probably has a rivalry with other franchises that are owned by primarily aquatic-based or amphibious life forms. They tend to get super mad at each other.
Okey-doke. And then he had a second question. Would a satirically native Pookie Chang have to use a different expression to name his cop show?
God, that's a
good question.
Fuck. Okay, so the reason is Pookie Chang is a character Nocturnal. And he is the sidekick to Brian Clauser, the Terminator, who's the main character. And Pookie knows he's sidekick-esque because his partner is so good at everything. And Pookie's just, frankly, he's good at talking shit and shagging bra. That's what he does. Pardon, that was my throat. So Pookie writes a TV show called Blue Balls, which is about two cops who go out and do cop stuff and bust crime. It's a buddy cop show, except the main character's Pookie Chang. So... if Pookie was a satirically six native and blue skin?
Did you tell them what the show was called?
Blue Balls.
Oh, you did. Yeah, okay, yeah. Make sure you mentioned.
So if Pookie was a this is like a third level connection between our stories. Pookie was blue skinned all over, would he still get blue balls? I think the answer is the show would be called Purple Balls, except that doesn't have the alliteration. So fuck you. Go to hell. You go to hell. Go to hell, Sean.
So good. Okay, another question from Mike King. He says, I was looking at Facebook and Scott posted a pic of himself with the word hair on his t-shirt. Editor's note, the word was actually chair, but the C was difficult to see. This brought my eyes to his perfectly shaped bald head. Mm-hmm, and as someone who is thinning incredibly on top, how did you know it was time to go full Monty? And if you didn't shave for a month right now, what would you have?
Hold on. First of all, I got to say, Eric Fisher in the chat room said Pookie's skill set is speaking and shagging. Well done, sir. Well done.
Wait, and also said bluer balls.
Daniel Baker, no gun. Teal testes.
Wow.
That's Pookie's show right there. Teal testes. The question was, when did I know it was time to shave my head? That is, I figured out it was time to shave my head a little bit later than I should have, which happens to most men with male pattern baldness, is there is a period of denial where we're literally looking in the mirror and seeing what is not an attractive hairstyle. There's no way around it. When you're starting to pay attention to the Rogaine commercials, like, maybe I could do, okay, yeah. And I don't know, at some point, I couldn't do anything with my hair. I remember, because I've been in bands forever and hair bandy type things, and going to a hairstylist who was much younger than me and saying, she's like, what do you want? I'm like, I don't know, just, you know, do something cool. And she played with the hair for a little while, and she got flustered. I'm like, what's the matter? She's like, there's nothing cool I can do with this. And she felt so bad, not as bad as I felt. And I think it was probably a couple days after that, I just pulled out the trimmers and just shaved it down. And then, of course, I had that moment, which many of us have. Many of us men, bald, like, we rub your head and go, oh, what have I done? What evil hath I wrought? And then I went to work and caught an enormous amount of shit from a gentleman named Ryan Minto,
who
literally took pictures and made images and art and just was merciless. He and his perfect fucking head of hair were just merciless to me. But then, I would say about 3 or 4 days into the shaving of the head, I'm like, you know what? This looks way better than it did before. And then there was like, you know what? I never have to buy shampoo or conditioner again. It's one bar of soap. And it was one of the best decisions I ever made. Because if you're a go-getter, you can either be going bald or you can be bald. And I choose to be.
But also back at that time when you first shaved your head, you also, I've seen band pictures and promotional, and you had crazy beards and crazy mustaches and not like the bracket, the lettuce bracket at the beginning of the pandemic, not that many, but a handful. And that might, you still do that sometimes.
Yeah. The good news is I don't have a lot of hair on the top of my head. No, sorry. The bad news is no hair on the top of the head, but you know what? The Lord provides. And the counter to that is I can do all kinds of crazy stuff with my facial hair because it grows like crazy. And then the Lord hates you. The Lord hates you. Because, man, if I could, my ear hair and nose hair and my crazy Andy Rooney eyebrows, and now I've got hair coming out in places, I'm like, there's not even a follicle here. There's not even a follicle. What are you doing to me, motherfucker? So, yeah. So now I am a bald man who has to trim his nose hair, ear hair, and every now and then pluck his crazy Andy Rooney eyebrows. It's a fact.
Okay. Bryce Collins asks, what novel or short story of yours do you think is underappreciated?
All of them, frankly. All of them. Every time there is some kind of TV anthology of short stories and my shit's not in it, I hate everyone involved with that project. My shit should be in there. It should have been in the new Twilight Zone. It should have been in the old Twilight Zone. I should have been in X-Files. I should have been in Warehouse 13. Frankly, the entire world has yet to wake the fuck up and smell the greatness. Smell the goddamn greatness, you sons of bitches. Done.
Okay. Frank Driscoll asks, or says, you've talked in the past about having the opposite of writer's block. Have you ever gotten reader's block? And I will say, I Googled reader's block to see if it was a thing, and that precisely worded question, not the first part, the not having writer's block, but the have you ever gotten reader's block came up like 67,000 times from the same block.
I'm going to need you to, now this is a challenge for my incredibly stunning, awesome wife. I'm going to need you into 3 sentences or less. In actual sentences, tell me what reader's block is. Because it popped in my head. I have my reader's block. What does it mean?
I just said, I was trying to look it up, and the only thing I found was the article that creates the question.
Oh, got it. Okay, yeah. Great. So do I have reader's block? I would say yes. The biggest problem I'm having right now is I will meet a new author. I will read their series. I will start with their first book. And almost inevitably, by the time when I love the first book, I'll move on to the second book. And in my head, which is counting the short days of my life every day, I'm like, that's basically the same fucking story. And like, all these people are going to live. And I, you know, there's no, I no longer have tension or suspense in the story because this same person is on the cover of book five and I'm on book two. So that would call a little bit of reader's block. And I gray out, I lose focus. I'm like, frankly, it's no comment on the writing or the plot or the characterization or the person. I just don't fucking care anymore. I'm not at all tense when these people are in danger. So I tend to put those series down. I'm in the middle of doing that right now. I would say the last series I've read absolutely to completion and been on the edge of my seat for all of it was Naomi Novik's Temeraire series, and that's 15 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's really difficult for me to get through an entire series.
You mean you read it or came out 15 years ago?
I think she was done. I think the last book came out over 10 years ago.
Yeah, but you
which
just
is a goddamn
it.
Fucking spectacular fucking series. Fucking World War, no, Napoleonic Wars with an Air Force of Dragons. Check, please.
I have a reader's block in that I find it hard to read romance books. And I think that's part of it. You don't like the comfort of the series. You're not into that kind of writing.
I don't like reading about normal people.
But for me, I have trouble reading romance books because I would like the human beings to be like me and like normal and flawed and worried about, did I set the coffee pot? And gosh, I hate this haircut. And that doesn't really happen, but it does happen in mysteries and thrillers. So I read those incessantly and I don't care. I can't even tell you how many I've read and I can't tell you a single title. I just keep picking them up on Audible.
Paul Inman in the chat room just mocked me and said, hey, wait. You're not a series guy? And he's asking that because he should burn in hell. Because all I do is write series. You know what, Paul? Enjoy the flames of Mephistopheles. Thank you very much.
He's not going to block you, though. He only does that accidentally.
In the climate-ravaged world of 2072, the city of Pura stands as a miraculous green haven. Pura is a geoengineered paradise that protects its fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. In a time when the world outside is unsafe, it's vital for Pura's existence that people rally behind the purpose of the city, and Demetria Lopez, head of the city's public relations, tirelessly promotes its idyllic image. But when she stumbles on a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Pura's existence, she must decide who and what she's willing to protect. From Wondery, the makers of Academy and Dr. Death, The Last City stars actors Ray Seahorn, Jeannie Tirado, and Maury Sterling. Follow The Last City on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Last City early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Hey, this is Scott, the author of this story. This episode is sponsored by Regal Unlimited, which is all about movies. I love movies, and you can see that in my work, from the references to films to the movie quotes I embed in my dialogue and the summer blockbustery big action sequences that close out each novel. If you like going to the theater like I do, because that's where movies are meant to be enjoyed, Regal Unlimited makes perfect sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription that pays for itself in just two visits. See any standard 2D movie anytime with no blackout dates or restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in a premium format like 4DX, IMAX, RPX, or ScreenX, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And don't forget the snacks, man! With Regal Unlimited, you get 10% off all non-alcoholic concession items. So if you're planning to see two or more movies this month, you need to join. Remember, Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription that pays for itself in just two visits. Sign up now in the Regal app or at regmovies.com/unlimited. That's regmovies.com/unlimited. Use the code SIGLER024 and earn 10% off a three-month subscription. That's SIGLER024 to earn 10% off a three-month subscription.
Elliot.
Colin Davidson says hi from Scotland. Hello, Colin. Welcome.
Hello. Elliot Evans asks, if you could take one Blood is Red story and expand it to novel length, would you do so? And if so, which one?
One Blood is Red story expanded to novel length. I think I can safely say I don't think so, because all of those stories are short stories for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
A serializer, cannot extend those stories. Those all have a pretty definitive end to them.
Yeah.
So I think the answer is no, which I'm very happy to say.
And I think like, for example, that we keep talking about Blood is Red is my favorite story that Scott's written, and I think I would not like it as a 175,000-word book because it would be too inevitably heartbreaking. It's already heartbreaking enough, so I think I would probably think, nope, this one's too dark for me.
Dude, the motherfuckers in the chat room right now are literally trying to extend GFL to a 14-book series. They've gradually been incrementally creeping it up. You know what? And all of you, are you aware of how hot the flames of Satan are? They're very hot.
Tony Lee asks, "Do you ever just hit a
wall?" Oh, Ryan Mental's in the. I don't think Ryan Mental was here when we were talking about him earlier, so he's gonna have to go back and watch both of these episodes.
Tony Lee asks, "Do you ever just hit a wall when writing? I'm not asking about writer's block, but more if there are times you can't make your brain write good, if maybe halfway through a novel or something."
Yeah, that has happened, and it took a long time to learn it, and it was after A and I started working together, where I would work until 2 or 3 in the morning and fucking crawl into bed and get up the next day and whine and piss and moan and send emails to you like, none of this is going to start over again. She's like, it's because you write garbage after 10 o'clock. So everything you write after 10 or 9 o'clock is shit. So stop writing at those times. So yes, that happened many years ago, but we have changed. The absolute max for writing original content is probably 8 to 8:30 p.m. The max for editing is probably 9 o'clock, because after that I'm just like, fuck these 8,000 words, I'm deleting them. And then I'll be like, I deleted 47 pages last night. She'll be like, what did they say? I'm like, I don't know, I didn't have a backup, I deleted that shit, I don't know, fucking, I gotta do it all over again. And then we spend a lot of time rewriting content that could have made us money. So that's an answer to the question.
Yep, we already put out books that are sometimes the length of two other books that we, like other people, so we could have sold them twice. So we for sure do not throw away 50,000 words anymore. Okay, Antonio Martini. That's a fabulous name.
It is. It's real good.
Antonio Martini asks, is there a lot of yourself in your writing? And if there is, from what parts of your life do you draw the most?
Is there a lot of myself in my writing? I would say yes, all the way through everything. And that is being said with allowing myself to expand my morality and my experience into realms with which I have no experience that also are different from my own morality. So primarily, there's a certain moral code to most of my main characters, secondary characters in my work. And I think it's fairly referential to what I'm doing. But if you only write books about yourself and people who think like you, that is dogmatic and extraordinarily boring. So in order to make living, breathing characters who think otherwise, in order to provide a contrast to your main characters, you have to expand beyond yourself. But even when I expand beyond myself, I get these people. You know what I mean? As, you know what? Hey, this is a genocidal maniac. I'm like, you know what? I'm not saying I approve, but I understand, to quote Chris Rock. Chris Rock's actually super helpful. Some of his stand-up as influential in my career. When he's, I'm not saying I condone it, but I understand. Like, that thought allows me to move into these other characters. So yeah, I'm in all of them, and there's people who are not me in all of them, but I understand.
And I will add, because this question has been asked in a variety of ways before, but since you asked it, I don't think you will have seen this, but very specifically, Scott has talked about several things that are literally from his life. In Pandemic, is it? Where Margot and Otto
are divorcing.
Mm-hmm. He drew on his real life relationship and divorce at the time for that. And there's also a scene in somewhere in the GFL, I think in the starter, I'm not positive, where Coach Hokor makes John and Jew, is it, hold hands and sit at the 50-yard line together until they can work through their BS. And that is a thing that Scott's parents did to Scott and his brother. That's
worst,
a real
worst
life thing.
Single worst punishment I ever had in my entire life. For all the times, my dad's a hands-on guy, which means when my brother and I, when he said, don't do this, and we went too far, there was corporal punishment in our household. But also, it's not a lot of it because we're like, I ain't doing that shit again. And for all of that, the countless drubbings I took from my own brother, the countless beatings my tiny ass got on the football field, the countless just brutal getting my ass whooped on the wrestling mat, all of this physical stuff where I was able to just fucking fuck you. Coming back. Let's go. I'll do it again. The one thing I only did one time was my parents made me hold my brother's hand on the front porch because we were acting the fool. And it was the worst punishment I've ever had in my entire life. And I've never done it again. So I had to get that into a book.
And David, I think you might be right. I do think it might have been, or I'm sorry, Icicle. Oh yeah, maybe
Ma,
you both
Ma
said that.
Tweety
yeah.
is based on Ma Sigler. It's yeah. magnified and it's amplified and it's exaggerated. But Ma Tweety is absolutely my mom. And my dad, this verbally, intellectual, physically dominating guy who just like kind of takes over any room he walks into, and is very positive and engaged with everybody, but everybody's paying attention to that motherfucker. It's just, he's one of those dudes. In my house, that sort of masculinity coming in was very well balanced with my mom, who was far more quiet and soft-spoken, but we gradually learned through multiple iterative lessons in our life, don't fuck with mom. You don't want
that
this
is
heat.
Still true to
you
this
do
day.
Not want this heat, dude. And it was not. It's not like all physical, but mom was not to be crossed. And my brother and I learned that pretty early on. So Ma Tweety is a great exaggeration because Ma yep. Tweety is this tiny little human being, maybe a 5'4", maybe a 105, a 110, and her sons are literal giants by her modern standards. And she runs that household and that family with an iron fist, and they don't say shit.
And there's also, you didn't actually say it, but there is the powerfulness that his dad was. A lot of that shows up in Hokor.
Yeah.
And how he coaches from a positive perspective. And some of the things he says verbatim were things that Scott was coached
by his dad.
I'll
say this
quick
so we move on to some other questions. My dad was an amazing educator in the values of a meritocracy because I was the coach's son, which in a lot of football programs can create an enormous amount of problems because sometimes the coach's son is not as good as the coach wants the son to be. And the coach will advance his son into positions where there are other people who are better at that particular position or put too much on this 15-year-old kid and expect him to elevate. And it can cause a lot of problems. That did not happen in my house. In my house, my dad was very incredibly supportive, super proud of me. There was no question. He was happy I was there and wanted me. And he was very super proud of my toughness and how hard I worked. But I was not going to be the starting quarterback. No, that was never, no matter. Like there, one time we had three quarterbacks get hurt. I come in, I'm ready to go. He brought up a fullback, made him the quarterback because the fullback was a better athlete. Mm. So meritocracy is a great thing.
Jordan Henderson says, I remember Sacred Cow from Stranger Things way back when. We've mentioned a few times tonight. Mm-hmm. For me, it still stands up, and I loved hearing it again after so long. My question is if when you hear stories you wrote long ago, what do you think?
There's this weird tesseract, if you will. If you take a line and you pull the two ends together and let the insides fold together and like that, and it's this old Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, was that tesseract? Mm-hmm. That whole thing, where in effect, it's a bit of a time travel thing. And way back when I was specifically writing short stories, I was finding things that I knew I could tell in 5,000 words-ish or less. So now when I go back and listen to those, I'm like, that's pretty cool. That's not bad. That's a really good idea. You delivered this well. Then when I moved into novel writing, I've gradually become accustomed to, I don't read my own work unless I absolutely have to for factual and continuity purposes, because I hate it. I hate my own work, because when you stretch something out to novel length, you get all of your creative weaknesses are exposed. If you're not good at character development, you're not good at continuity, you can't keep track of things, all of those things are writ large for everyone to see. So now I don't really read my own work unless I have to. But when I go back into the old short stories, I'm like, that's pretty tight. That's a pretty tight story.
In the chat room on YouTube, Ben Fraley says, I'm from Indiana and I resent that statement. We are much worse people from Iowa. And Ben, aren't you the Ewok guy?
We're all horrible, Ben. We're all horrible, flawed, tragic, selfish, petty, bitter people. Let's be honest. And every time we do something nice for other people, you should pat yourself on the back and you should have a glass of Oban, which is what Eric asked was in the glass.
Okay. Jeff Evans says, if you could have dinner with up to five of your characters, living or dead, who would the dinner guests be?
I got to answer Ryan's question.
I definitely would have Ma Tweety. I definitely would have Masal.
So what characters would I have for dinner?
Yeah, you could have up to five of your characters.
Five characters for dinner. Ma Tweety. Yeah, for sure. Ma Tweety, Pookie Chang, Missal the Efficient. I'm not inviting Kayla Myers to dinner. It's not going to happen.
Or Ann Lafferty.
I'm not going anywhere near Ann Lafferty. I think, although I do think, as crazy as it sounds, Yitzhak Shamdi.
Yeah.
From the Crypt. Because I think that is one of the strongest characters I've ever written. It's one of the best things I've done in my career is to write this absolutely reprehensible character. And most characters you write, this is a good person with a tragic flaw. He is a tragic person with a good flaw that mm-hmm. gets in the way of him delivering. We did Missal the Efficient, right?
Uh-huh.
Who's you know what? Let's be honest. Who's hot? Let's make the fifth one. Let's make this one someone smoking. Who do we got that's smoking who does not want to murder people or cut off their penises?
Who's Kayla Myers first?
I'll go with Somali Midori. Let's bring her over. Okay, let's bring her over. Because you know exactly what you're getting with Somali Midori. You know exactly what you're getting. Also, if she just every evening, smoking. Looks
I think
good.
Clarence Otto, I would also.
Come on. You seriously? That dude. Come on. Grow a backbone, Clarence. Jesus.
Okay. Claire Cook asks, do you hide any secrets in your books that only a few people will find? Or little hat tips or Easter eggs for people or love?
Jesus Christ, Claire, do you not read my... Okay. If you have read through all of my stuff, you probably see most of those Easter eggs. I hide stuff for people who have read all of the stuff. Sometimes read all of the stuff multiple times. So that is one of my great joys in life, is to bury these invisible yet linearly contextual Easter eggs within the stories so that hopefully when you're five books down the road and you're distracted because you're having trouble with your spouse and your kid's acting up at school and God, you just don't want to go to work and you just abstractly listen to my story and you'll hear something like, wait, this is the third time I've heard the story. Did I catch this shit before? And then you go back and listen back to other stuff. And then you get that mind-blowing moment. This motherfucker planned this shit from fucking square one. And I read the first story 15 years ago. I think that is a moment of magic as a creator that not a lot of people get.
And I agree with you, Colin Davidson, in the Facebook chat. Donna would have him for dinner.
Oh, got it. Continue. Go.
We're not going to spoil any of those Easter eggs. So you'll find them on your own if you haven't and if you do. But I'll also add this. I know of at least one thing that is a specific, it means specifically something to the one person who will read that. And I think I don't know if that ever will happen, but that's pretty cool. And of course, it sounds like she probably didn't know either. There's a lot of junky names in books, of course.
Yep, let's go.
Brad Stronger says, do you think you'll host any more Sigler Fests in the future? And the answer to that is absolutely no.
No.
100%
no. It's not going to happen. The number of people attending became a blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
Once we got up to 250 people, there were problems that arose that A and I could have never seen happening. And once those problems arose and those problems caused conflict between the two of us, we're already going in the red on these things. We're working our ass off on these things. We are literally sacrificing a month's writing every year to put these things on. We were like, you know what? I'm not doing this shit if I'm arguing with you. This is the empress of my life right here. I'm not going to argue with her over this shit. So we did 9. They were spectacular. I will not trade them for anything. Yep. We tried to do the 10th, but oops, COVID. So no, we're not doing another one.
And there are certain, as you guys know, if you watch this show and you have been faithfully watching this show for any length of time during the pandemic, we are very science-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not as yet feel like I want to be responsible for making people come to a place where they could likely get sick. And that's going to go on for me for a couple more years at the very least.
Eric Fisher suggests maybe a lottery and keep it to 20 people.
And the other thing we might do is we may have something attached. The very first Sigler Fest was attached to a different convention. And we had their permission to do it, and we did it the day before. But I think the only thing that may happen
is... It was really small.
Oh, yeah, it was quite, yeah.
Like 20 people.
And a goodly amount of them were either local or just they were arriving a day early anyway. But what I will tell you is we will very likely plan, if we go to conventions like Dragon Con or a cruise, things like that, that could happen, where it would be a thing exactly like that, where if we say we're going to Dragon Con, next year. We'll show up a couple of days early and literally be like, cool, we're staying at this hotel, or we're staying in this area of town. We're definitely taking a booze cruise on Saturday. Here's the link if you want to buy tickets and go with us. And so that we are not doing any organizing.
Yeah, that's the big thing.
But we can still hang out.
Ideas where we get courted as talent to entertain lovely people with disposable income. We're listening to that. Anything where we have to plan a thing, you may all burn in hell. Ask Paul's question, babe.
Paul Inman in the Facebook chat says, you mentioned the end of the Siglerverse. What's behind that and what comes next?
All right. So what is behind it is I am now tapped out on my second detailed continuity managed franchise. The first was Star Wars. Star Wars, for a while, was incredibly well integrated. I met the guy who was in charge of just the FileMaker Pro database to keep track of all the shit and all the connections. It was really well done, but eventually it got to a point where your job as an entertainer, in that format, you need to sell toys to young people. That's Star Wars. The objective of Star Wars is to sell merch. That is what the whole franchise is all about. Eventually it got to the point where people were like, how many books do I have to read, and comic books and video games do I have to play and movies do I have to watch to keep track of all this shit? And it collapsed under its own weight. Now, A&I stopped watching the MCU, the chronological watch through after Loki. And I won't say why for spoilers, but after Loki season one, I'm like, dude, how much time am I going to spend in my life doing this shit? It gets to a point where it collapses under its own weight.
And specific to the MCU, we were doing an in-universe chronological watch-through because he had seen quite a lot of the MCU and I had seen not so very much of the MCU. We were filling in pieces for him, but also it got to the point where at this point I know enough about the MCU that I don't care if I miss a few things here and there, or I miss like why it was in this order. I don't know that matter. So I think that is also one of the things as well.
Yeah. And it was like, it gets to a point where I am a fan. I'm a fanboy. I watch a thing. I get super into it. And then at some point, the creators of that property take their eye off the ball, or they start looking at another ball. And all of these things are perfectly fine. They're the ones making the things. And remind me to do Berkshire Hathaway reference to this in a second.
Okay.
In having experienced the disappointment of that as a fan, and having my heart broken, be like, dude, I would have watched shit forever. What are you guys doing? How do you fuck this shit up? It's clearly you don't give a fuck about us fans anymore. I don't want that to happen. And now we are to the point where if you're going to be a full dedicated Siglerverse aficionado, we're talking in the ballpark of 12 to 14 novels and short stories. And you have to listen to all of this to get all of the in jokes for what's coming up. I think that's too much. And it's also too much for me. My brain doesn't work that way. We've got this huge wiki. So now we're like, we're going to finish it properly. We're going to do what these other franchises, these bigger franchises, have not. Be like, there is an end to this. Everything ties together. You can then go back and listen to all of it from beginning to end, and you will see connections that you never thought were there before. And when you get to the end, you will be happy. And you will say to yourself, the time I spent with the Siglerverse was wonderful. It finished strong. They respected me. They respected my time. I'm going to go back and listen to it again. And then you'll buy a bunch of fuck ton of my merch, right? Because you want to throw money at me. It's what you want to do.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
As far as the Berkshire Hathaway thing goes, the gentleman just died today. Do you know
Warren
who that
Buffett?
Is? No, the other guy. The other guy.
Henry Kissinger?
I don't think Henry Kissinger was in Berkshire Hathaway.
But he did die today.
Did he?
Yeah.
No.
It's definitely Warren Buffett.
R.I.P. H.K. No, he's not.
No,
Munger. Charlie Munger died today, and he died at 99. And I read a bunch of his quotes, which when you are a multi-billionaire and you die at 99, you get to have people post your quotes. That's how it works. And one of his great quotes was, if you're building a business, you should build your business so that any idiot could run it well, because eventually an idiot will be running your business. And I thought that was awesome. And there is no one who's as big of an idiot as me. So, if I don't put a capstone on this motherfucker, it's going to wind up just some crazy garbage is going to come out. Now, frankly, I don't want the fourth iteration of the rookie.
Yeah.
When I'm dead, I got no control. A's in charge of that shit. But by and large, I'd like someone to make... I'm going off too long. The end of the Sigler verse, what comes after is me writing a bunch of one single book horror stories, much more in the Stephen King vein, mm-hmm. without sequels, which also goes into our Hollywood efforts and our adaptation efforts. If I write one tight, discrete novel with one tight, discrete idea, our chances of getting adaptations and me being able to be on the red carpet for a premiere with my beautiful wife in a fucking green dress, which is one of our goals forever. That'll come true before I die. So there you go.
So I think I've been looking in the chat room. I don't think that there's another new question. Let me scroll down mm-hmm. just a little bit. Make sure that we said that, Eric Fisher. Yeah, I think we're good. There's a good one from Nick Ladd. As you talk yep. about finishing the Siglerverse, is this going to incorporate connections on the generation?
Oh, shit. Nick, how goddamn dare you? The flames of hell burn hot. Hot. Sir, it's all connected. All of this shit has been connected and planned for a very long time. It's all written down. It's all tracked. So whatever I do, stay alive. It's all connected. I can't reveal what connects to what right now because I don't like spoilers and I don't want to give you guys any clues to figure out how everything ties together. But I will say in all modesty, A knows I'm a very modest person. When it is all said and done, the platinum standard for how to tie shit together, it's going to be fucking right here, dog. It's going to be fucking right here. And I'm going to go out on top in the Siglerverse, kiss it goodbye, and then I'll write a bunch of stories that are nothing but fart jokes. So there you go.
All right. I think maybe we head out on that note. Colin Davidson asked one more.
Colin, I have a current comic book adaptation brewing in the wings right now. I will give it a 12.7% chance of actually happening because I have experience with the people making it. But yes, we have that. However, the broader answer is no. We are focused on writing these next 12 novels, getting them done, getting them in the store, making money off of these novels by delivering a solid product to an adoring audience. And then A and I want to spend more time sitting in lawn chairs, sipping Mai Tais. And maybe fall asleep in the lawn chair. Maybe Fortnite, yeah. Which I'm going to do shortly.
You guys, thank you so much for joining us for the live stream. If you joined the live stream and everybody listening on the podcast, thank you for joining us. The next thing you will have in your feed in 1 week, in either case, is the start of the Slay Book 2.
Slay Season 2. Mjolnir will be back. and also in your back, which is a whole different equation.
You're going to sign off the podcast?
I'm going to sign off the podcast. You guys are all wonderful, and this has been a wonderful time talking to you all. And as wonderful as you are, we want to let you know that we're going to go goof off. Happy birthday to me, motherfuckers.
And
you may all... You know what it is? Do you know what it is?
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. And you can kiss off into the sky. Ha, ha, ha,
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
You have been listening to Blood is Red, volume one of the Color Collection series of short story anthologies written by Scott Sigler, performed by the author. For more information on Scott, please visit scottsigler.com. Blood is Red was produced by Empty Set Entertainment. Copyright 2023, Empty Set Entertainment. Theme music is Dead Silence by the composer Vasya Sakal.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.